Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, Cindy and I were reminiscing right before the program about a gentleman that we met many years ago, maybe 25 years or something like that ago, down in South Carolina, who was seemed to have all the wisdom in the world about growing things, and he said the herbs were taking over.
He did. He was a pretty special gentleman who was living and working at Middleton Plantation and had for many, many years. And I was really eager to learn what he knew about Low Country cooking. And he really was sort of a man of the earth. He was pretty extraordinary. And so he was certain that herbs were taking over the world.
Yeah, he had big interest in roots and spices that he'd grown up with, but he thought, it's all headed to herbs now.
Headed to herbs. He was right, of course. I remember when I first started cooking professionally in the early 80s, we had things like watercress and arugula.
What could you buy in the grocery store?
Nothing. I mean, shallots were unusual to find in the grocery store. And of course, this was in Charleston, South Carolina. And we had fresh basil, fresh thyme, marjoram, Italian flatleaf parsley, which was a type of parsley I'd never seen before because we'd always seen the curly parsley. But, you know, it was such a great first experience for me, working and doing an apprenticeship in that kitchen because the chefs there were absolutely dedicated to, using everything fresh and natural, and this was quite a while ago, so they were pretty forward thinking and actually at the same time old world thinking, because obviously this is how people used to cook, which was with fresh herbs.
Yeah, my great-grandmother, whenever she was moved to a new place, she always planted her chives so that she had them.
That's awesome.
That was just,
I love that.
It's one of those first things, just put a little pot out.
There you go.
But made sure that she had chives ready to go.
Well, and that's one of the oldest herbs, chives. So that's makes a lot of sense.
So you pulled up an intelligent list of herbs. And one of the things in the program today, we're going to talk about herbs we like to work with and how to get some things done, like making herb oil and using herbs in vinaigrettes or marinades, things like that. But the list, like I pulled up an additional list of herbs. And it's just unbelievable. Just, I'm going to read you the A's.
Okay, good.
The A's, you couldn't do A to Z of herbs because it would be a 24-hour telethon.
All right.
Okay. Ajwain or karam seeds.
Oh, boy.
From everywhere from Afghanistan, Egypt, Eritrea, South Asia. So pretty broadly, yeah.
That's great. Okay.
Ukujura.
Mm. I've never heard of that.
From Australia.
Okay.
Alexander's herb, whatever Alexander's herb is, and he's not showing his origin, also known as Smimium olosatrum.
I wish you wouldn't talk that way, Tony.
In case.
Okay, all right.
I love Latin.
Golly.
Alkanet.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a hair product or a disorder.
What?
But that alkanet is an herb for red color, it says.
Okay.
This one is my favorite amongst the A's. Commonly known as the alligator pepper.
Ooh, like that.
But the proper name is Obongo Chobi or Mabongo spice.
There you go.
Now, that's not a happy hot pepper. I don't know. I hope it's a hot pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Other nickname is Hepper Pepper. Hepper Pepper. Escapum is the Latin from West Africa. So, allspice. Angelica. Angelica's name is the most ridiculous and Catholic of all the herb names. Angelica, Archangelica.
There you go. All right.
Anise.
That's not so unusual.
No.
Mm-mm.
Aniseed.
It's nice to know there's an A that we know what it is.
Aniseed myrtle.
Oh, boy.
you're getting to the question. This is from Australia. Anato.
Love Anato.
Which... is that an herb? I guess those are the seeds.
It is. It's a seed, but it's used more like a spice. And as you know, it's dried.
but annatto is
an herb. I guess
it's
dried. I guess that's what's done to it. And then, and then you usually pulverize that in a mortar and pestle. And obviously it's used to color cheese.
But wait, it's Artemisia.
Among many other things. What's that?
Artemisia.
Okay.
The heroic herb from Greek times.
I was going to say that's a Greek name. Okay.
There is.
Obviously.
I'm going to try to say this as appropriately as I can.
Oh, boy. Close your ears.
Asafoetida. Boy, and that was the cleaned up version.
Okidoki.
I know nothing about.
I don't want to know what that is.
I regret that I know nothing to say about asafoetida.
So you only so you only have the weird A's? You have the whole,
I have
the
whole
with
alphabet.
These, do you know?
Asarabica.
All right, go on.
That's also known as Acerum Europaeum. I feel like I'm in a Mel Brooks movie. The Avens.
If only he was here right now.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd have plenty to say about.
He would have a lot to say.
Yeah, God knows what it'll be about. And then avocado leaf.
Ooh. I wonder what you do with that.
I don't know.
That's cool.
So on the list of the A's, how many had
Not
you
too
ever
many.
Heard of?
Not too many. That's a little scary. Sort of makes me...
It's a little crazy, right?
Well, especially since I looked at a book of herbs and most of those weren't in there. So that's an interesting list.
Yeah, it's a...
There's a lot going on.
Remarkable stuff. So anyway, your intelligent list. So would you... Let's get away from my silliness and and get onto something sharp. All right, so everyone puts out these Instagram photographs and everyone has these beautiful plate photographs that have these brilliantly colored oils on them.
Right.
And so everyone at home thinks they're making an herb oil when they take herbs, chop them up, put them in a bowl, and mash them around with some oil and strain it. Is that how you make an herb oil?
No, it isn't.
No. So what's the proper way?
Well, you have to.
And what are nice herb oils to work with?
Okay.
To get that Instagram photo that impresses all of the people that you ever met.
Well, you have to blend them. You have to blend them in order to get colored oil, pretty much. Most colored oils are. The product is either blanched first and shocked. So when we make a regular oil, we blanch it very quickly. It's in boiling water for maybe all of 30 seconds, and it takes a lot. So to make one container, you probably need, I don't even know how to say, maybe a gallon of arugula. And then you immediately shock it, stop the cooking process in ice water, and then you squeeze out all that water. And then we puree it with corn oil in the blender. And you really have to kind of push your blender, unfortunately, to the point of, did that run a little longer than it should? So you kind of stop it at the very last moment before you're like, yeah, my blender's not supposed to be running for more than 3 minutes. So you just kind of have to look at the directions on your blender. But you need a really good blender that really pulverizes things. And puree it, and then we put it through a cheesecloth that sits in a chinois, and it takes a long time for the oil to drip through that. And that's how we end up with our regular oil, which is a beautiful, I mean, dark green, gorgeous oil that has a pretty tone of arugula to it. And
so it has some of that little spiciness that
yes,
the arugula does, but it has a real brilliant color.
Yeah. And we make chive oil, which just won't give you a good color. It gives you a very pale green, but it's still pretty, and it tastes like chives. And we do that by just pureeing the chives in the oil in the blender. We don't cook the chives. So it just depends on the product that you're using, whether or not you have to blanch it first or not. And
the things that you have to blanch are things that have almost like that layered skin to a leaf,
mm-hmm.
where you have to actually cook enough to get through that.
Right, because if you're going to do basil oil, you would not blanch it, obviously. You would have to just puree it straight from, and it would take a good bit of basil to get a good oil. And, obviously you wash everything really well first and pat it dry. Basil bruises very easily, so again, you need a blender that's in good shape. So that's how
meaning the blades are sharp. And
yeah, exactly.
You're not going to be punching that herb for a
exactly.
long time.
Oh, and that's the same thing. That's one of the reasons why your knives need to be sharp. When you're handling something, you don't want to bruise the food. You want to slice through it cleanly. And the sharper the knife, the smoother the cut, the better the food is handled. So a perfect example of that is if you actually look at a ripe tomato when you go to slice it and you see that it's perfectly smooth, that slice. I mean, you can actually see a sheen on the tomato slice. Your blade is unbelievably sharp. And the more jagged the blade, which to you is microscopic, frankly, or it can be obvious to the eye. I mean, if your blade is obviously roughed up, you really need to sharpen it or hone it or get a new one. And that's one of the things with a lot of the knives that are on the market. This is off topic, but I might as well talk about it since I'm talking about it. And one of the things with a lot, I'm not going to be specific with the knife brand, but with a lot of the knives, I'll just say they're not German knives. They are very delicate blades, and they are very, very delicate and beautifully made.
Easy to chip.
Oh my gosh! You can easily. I mean, you put that in your sink, and you hit. I mean, you hit that with anything. Sometimes, you know, I've had. I mean, and I'm obviously unbelievably careful with my knives, but at home, I don't know what it is. There just seems to be too many other weird obstacles at home, and I have chipped one of my knives at home, and it's you hit it against a fork.
Out.
In a sink. Well, there's that.
People and help out. That's
the
thing.
Yeah, well, that's typically I won't
let
anyone
touch. Let me just do this
touch.
For you, or I'll just do some dishes
yeah,
for a
like,
second.
No, don't touch my knives. Yeah. Get away from the
You're
knives.
You're such a friendly host, Cindy.
Back away from the knives.
You're such a friendly host. Get out of my kitchen.
No, normally no one is using a knife in my kitchen except for me.
I always find it's the person that's trying to help you that like washes your things.
And you're like, oh boy.
Like one,
anyway,
you might cut your whole arm
off. It's nice
that
people try to help. So let's not be too negative about that.
No.
I mean, it's great when people help.
Neither one of us are fussy about people doing things in the kitchen.
Neither one of us are fussy, right?
No.
Yeah, no.
Not
but
at
anyway,
all.
So with the herbs, just if you are, getting back to just working with herbs, not necessarily making a pureed oil, but you do want a very sharp knife. You can use really sharp scissors. Oftentimes, if we're just adding fresh herbs to a salad, I just snip them with my scissors, especially basil. It's perfect for basil because it is a wider, flatter leaf, and I might even cut it, lengthwise in half, and then I just snip it. And that's a great way to deal with.
Yeah, forever taking big basil leaves and snipping it on pasta.
Yeah, it's perfect. They do bruise so easily. So anyway. So back to the list, we were starting.
No, just it's funny that you mentioned that about the first thing I was thinking about when you buy herbs or what's important, because grocery stores have them packed all different sorts of ways. Smell the product. To me, that's, mm-hmm. I was thinking about so many of the things, my little one, she forever, like if she sees a little green leaf thing, she doesn't want to eat it. Why? Because it's kind of like in your teeth and, right?
Right.
But if I tell her smell it, she likes the smell of it.
Okay.
So she has better instincts than most of us do because forever. I mean, have you ever had a mint julep or something and like you're having the drink and you get all like the mint in your teeth and.
Right, right.
You're like, now I'm half drunk and I've got mint in my teeth, you know? Someone should have strained that out after they made the darn drink.
Right.
Scent is the leading characteristic that you want the herb there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Once in a great while, it's texture, but I mean, for what herbs?
Well, mostly you just want them to be unbruised and green and fresh looking and crisp, if that's the case, you know? You don't want anything to not be, you know, let's say just a piece of rosemary, which is a hardy herb. I mean, that's resin-like. It's pine-like in texture. If that has brown pieces on it, don't buy it.
Or honestly, if it's not pine-like, if it's not almost sticky,
it's
from being like pine, then it's dried out.
It's also, I don't know. I am not the greenest thumb in the world, and I'm learning.
Uh-oh,
and I will say that rosemary. I haven't killed anything. My point is that rosemary is one of the easiest herbs to grow. I have had such good luck over the years with rosemary and lavender.
And they just want sun.
Exactly. And I think part of my problem is I don't water them as much as I should.
Lucky for you, they're problem solved herbs.
Exactly.
They don't need that much water.
Exactly. So that's the first things that I planted anywhere I've ever lived. And so those are two things I suggest right off the bat because I also love to cook with, well, particularly rosemary. I'm just in love with rosemary. There's so many things you can do with rosemary, but yet you don't really eat it. That's the thing. It's not the most wonderful thing in your mouth, but the flavor of rosemary is incredible, and the perfume.
My dad he's not a particularly complicated eater. He loves food. He's a super adventurous eater when you put things in front of him, but he's not the guy who's going to go, besides making us like peanut butter and grilled cheese and honey and apple sandwiches and that kind of stuff, Like how much stuff do kids like? Can you make in a grilled cheese sandwich at one time? Which, thank him for that forever. Besides that, he's not the most adventurous guy about putting things together. But I know I got him on using very good olive oil and using fresh rosemary and chopping that rosemary fine or grinding it with a little bit of the oil. And then when you take a steak off the grill and you rest it and slice it and salt it, to just lay that fresh oil, that very good olive oil with the rosemary scent for the beef is just a remarkable thing. And that's something that I know he does even without me standing there, because it makes him really, really happy.
Well, it's pretty, and rosemary marinade works with a lot of meats. I mean, it would blow out a chicken. That's the only, you know, a delicate bird it's too much for. You know what I mean.
I just think that's awesome. When we come back, now that we've blown out a chicken, when we come back, we'll get off the A list of herbs and offer a few more recipes. And in the third segment, we're going to get down into a chef's challenge, as per usual, on Formula Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today the topic is herbs.
You sound so...
And not just...
So depressed.
Oh, I'm not
herbs
so...
Herbs are fun.
So herbs.
Oh, well, no.
It's not as exciting as blowing
herbs.
Out a chicken.
I can't
which is
help
what we
but,
ended the last segment
I cannot
with.
Help but have the visual, now that you laughed at me about it, of the chicken in that movie, The Money Pit, where it's a turkey, actually, where one of the many things that fails in her house is that the oven blows up and the turkey flies out of the oven and I believe goes through the kitchen window out the back of the house. I love that movie. Just a little side note.
I guess you have to be careful what you stuff that turkey with.
All right. So borage.
Yeah. I've always been afraid to print
borage. One more time incorrectly.
Borage.
Let's say it with a Russian accent. No. That is something I've never worked with. I understand it originated in Syria.
I'm afraid to put it on the menus because people will read it and think that
it sounds scary.
It's too pompous. Yeah.
Oh, is that what? Okay, so
borage.
In British drinks, it's a garnish for Pim's cup. What's Pim's cup? What is that?
It's a sort of terrifying concoction.
Boy. I shouldn't have brought it up. Okay.
Pim's number 31.
They also use it to brew for tea. And in New Zealand, the flower is special for honey. So it says it's a cool cucumber aroma and flavor. So borage.
Borage is going to be pretty interesting in a salad, especially like with a smoked fish or something like that.
Okay. It sounds like it has an odd texture, so I'm not really super excited about it, I have to say. But maybe I would love to hear if someone is excited about it and they have been, it's important to your cooking or you have a recipe. I would love to email me. I would like to hear about it because I would like to learn about that.
All right, so your list, you've got chive blossoms. You're talking about chives, the flowers, or both?
Well, I was going to talk about both. Chive blossoms, either the flower whole or pull the little petals out and use them as a pretty garnish. The flower is pretty big, so it makes a, you know, I don't think anyone's actually going to eat it. But if you pull the little flowers out, that might be part of the dish. And they're really beautiful, pale purple. And of course, as far as chives go, I mean, it tastes like onion. So it's anywhere you use an onion flavor. Yeah, and a little bit of a garlic tone to it, both the perfume of the chive and the taste. So, you know, anywhere you use either one of those things, it's nice to have fresh chive. And when I work with chives, again, another... You know, again, getting back to the sharp knife, you really need a sharp knife when you work with chives. They're so tender, and we usually chop them very fine.
Sounds like a perfect garnish for a salmon tartare or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And lavender, this is your hit list of all your favorites these days?
No, not necessarily. There's some things on here that are a little bit unusual to me, but mostly there are things that are common that people can get. Unlike the list you started with that was, you know, I mean, I didn't even know what some of those things were.
I need alligator peppers, okay? Mbongo spice. I need that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. But on this list, which are your three favorite to work with? And which three haven't you worked with that much that you want to work with?
Well, we already talked about rosemary. So, you know, that's an absolute favorite. Lemon verbena is truly one of my favorite herbs, and it is another one that's unusual. Yeah, it's hard to get. I bought like 24 plants, and I'm hoping that some of them will actually grow. Right now, because of all our rain, they're pretty tiny. But they're like little thistle-y action on the back of the on the top of the leaves, and so it's not something you can just eat. It is something that you need to puree or steep tea. It's different cultures make tea from lemon verbena.
Yeah, that's often a summertime cold drink in the south of France. Is just cold water, cold ice water, mineral water, and steeped with a little bit of simple syrup that has been steeped with verbena. Lemon verbena.
They make tea with it in Mexico and Chile. And also I make sorbet with it, which is very pretty. And I simply bring water up to a boil that I add a little bit of fresh lime juice and sugar to and steep. You have to steep a lot of leaves. It takes, they're tiny, half an inch long. And so you need probably 100 leaves or more. You know, I've never counted them, but, you know, you need a nice amount of verbena to make a good sorbet, to make, say, a pint of sorbet. And just steep it in there for maybe just a couple of minutes. It immediately loses its color. It doesn't look good. It doesn't produce a nice color to the sorbet, but it sure does taste great. And it's, you know, inherently lemony. So, that's what's so appealing about it. It's very fresh. It's very refreshing. I think it's soothing. It has a soothing element to it. So if you do make tea with it, it definitely has that feeling to it.
So what on your list is something that you haven't worked that much with, but you're excited?
The epazote, which is Mexican. I was really fascinated reading about it. It has a quality to it that, I guess in Mexican cooking, when they make black beans, they put it in with it because it helps with the gaseous aspect of the bean. It apparently kind of shuts it down. So,
I need to get something for Christmas for several people.
it has a pretty strong flavor. So I would really like to work with it because I would like to understand it and see what it does taste like. But I think it has long-term cooking needs. It doesn't seem like it's something that you chop and, you know, add to a salad or something. But I mean, perhaps you can. I'd like to learn more about that.
Things that I love on your list here that I never get to see enough of: marjoram.
I agree with you. I love marjoram.
Marjoram
it's gorgeous.
Is like the much more graceful cousin of oregano.
Yeah.
It has some of those same flavors. It is just as nice or nicer, especially with like nice oily Mediterranean fish, than the oregano is. And if you're lucky, you get the buds, and you can essentially make your own salt-cured capers with the buds from the marjoram, and
that's really
just
nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, marjoram is beautiful. It has a very pretty perfume. Again, as you say, the leaves are tiny. You don't need much of it. It's pretty pungent. And I definitely think of chicken. It won't blow out the chicken.
Hooray!
It's actually good for the chicken. and it is, it's very pretty. I can see it with turkey, any sort of poultry, but it's certainly fish. I could definitely see it with a great piece of grouper or rockfish in an oil, as you say, and using the buds, like you say, if you're lucky enough to get them. That's pretty fun with a piece of fish, maybe a little shallot and
pretty traditional
lime.
Provençal thing to do. To open up the fish and lay lemon slices and garlic in there and a number of, like a huge bunch of marjoram
mm-hmm.
and then grill that whole fish.
Okay.
Or even poach the whole fish like that, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that would be good.
So the other thing on this list, I think the most underrated thing on your list here to me is sage. Truly love using it, and I think people don't often know how to use it. And I'll tell you a great easy way to sort of cheat and use sage.
Okay.
You make something that's akin to mac and cheese, okay? Some kind of nice dried pasta, cook it thoroughly through, not until it's al dente, don't kill it. Get your cheese organized that you want to serve with the dish. If you want to in advance make a cheese sauce, please make the bechamel, make the cheese sauce. But you honestly could just have fresh pasta and good oil and Reggiano. And the thing to do with that pasta is when it comes out, have cold butter in a pan, get that hot with the sage. Do not start it until the hot pasta is in there. The hot pasta starts to melt that butter. The sage will perfume and sweat out into that butter. As that butter heats up into the pasta itself, and it perfumes all that pasta, covered for a second, maybe 5 seconds, with some kind of a top. Take that off, go to your bowl, cheese your pasta, give it plenty of extra virgin olive oil. You'll be very happy with that version of mac and cheese. It'll have this great perfume from the sage.
Tibeti comes to mind.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
great.
Tibeti would be great, would be a good shape.
That's
for that.
That's great.
The strozzapreti, it would work nicely. Not a long cook thing.
When I was in culinary school, it's funny that you talked about it that way because it sort of came back to me. We never used a saute pan to toss the pasta when it came out of the pasta water. We always had warm bowls that would sit on top. We had obviously a pasta machine that boiled the pasta in different baskets. So there was always room to sit a bowl on top of the warm water, hot water. So the bowl was warm. You would always have, you'd put your, as you said, you'd put your cold butter in there and toss your pasta in, whatever it was that we were serving it with, typically, especially if it was something like herbs or cheese, we would just toss it and onto the plate. So that's another fun thing for home. If you want to not use a saute pan and, you know, make one more thing dirty, I mean, a bowl where you're not actually cooking on it, will make it a little bit easier to clean. So,
yeah, I will admit that I always, my habit is always use a great big heavy like Creuset mm-hmm. or a Staub pan mm-hmm. for that kind of thing because the heat transference is mm-hmm. so good. But that's, it's funny. That's, to me, that's one of those things that people don't use enough, don't get. Tarragon's on your list. That's very in fashion right now.
Oh, I love tarragon, but that's another sort of, I just wonder if that's hard to grow. It seems like it is. I mean, I've tried to grow tarragon everywhere I've ever lived, and it never makes it. But it is a long sort of spindly plant, and the leaves are very tender, and tarragon is beautiful. Hand-chopped, easy to eat that way. Again, a tarragon oil would be pretty. Tarragon cream for a shrimp or a piece of fish. Obviously, tarragon is what's used to make béarnaise sauce, which is hollandaise, made with, you add the reduction of tarragon and wine or tarragon and vinegar to your hollandaise. Or oftentimes, I'll just add freshly chopped tarragon to my hollandaise instead of making reduction from it, which the leaves are fresh and pretty and beautifully perfume it. So why not do it that way?
And it is also the natural partner, sort of the, I would say, their most proper partner for that chicken that doesn't get blown out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also on your list is filet. Now, that's not in fashion, right?
Oh, my gosh. Well,
what is filet powder?
It's from the sassafras tree.
So is an herb, is a root?
I believe it's an herb. So it's classified as an herb. And it's, the filet powder is made from the dried leaves of the sassafras tree.
Okay.
Which grow wild along the east coast of the United States. And obviously, filet powder is, it's so important to both Creole and Cajun cooking in Louisiana. And often with the filet powder, when they make gumbo, the filet powder would be added at the end, and it actually helps to thicken the gumbo. And so it's a very important ingredient in gumbo of that region.
It's funny to think about an herb being a thickener. Ever since we had that nutritionist on, Kasha Kynes, I've been wondering if I've been eating enough cilantro every day. One, because I love it.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it seems like every time I put, you know, like I want to chop cilantro to add it to something to, you know, like the tacos or something or what, whatever the stir fry is or what, like I'm chopping like mountains of the stuff. It's not just like I don't want a few little leaves. And sometimes I want just whole, you know, like trees of cilantro, it seems like, on those dishes. I don't know what it is about that. I know that some people are supposed to be offended.
That's it. I think that's what's so interesting about cilantro. It's the one herb that people
I'm
either
foolishly
love it
attracted
or don't
to
like
it.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to not really like it. I don't think that I'd ever had it in a, you know, used in a proper way, used in the dish that it should be used in other words. And I love cilantro now. And I agree with you. I mean, they're just, it's almost addicting in a way. But it definitely has its own particular thing going on.
I mean, that's one of those things. My daughter always wants to eat tomatoes. Tomatoes are not in season,
mm-hmm.
but So how do you get any kind of flavor from them? It's like you go through the grocery store, which, and you try to find tomatoes because they're not, obviously not at markets yet. And you keep smelling the containers to see if anything has anything remotely like a tomato scent. And then you ripen them as best you possibly can, you know, with a little bit of light. And a very easy way to use a ton of cilantro and be happy about it is avocado and these tomatoes. Marinate the, like, large Campari tomatoes or something. Marinate those guys quartered with a little bit of salt, extra virgin olive oil, black pepper, and add that avocado, add a lot of cilantro and lemon at the very end, a little more oil. Give it an easy toss so you don't end up making guacamole out of the out of the avocado. And that on a warm piece of toast or something like that with a poached egg on it, that's a popular breakfast for it.
Sounds good to me.
Me and her, but it's I want the cilantro. She wants the tomatoes.
I made crab cakes the other day and made basically guacamole in a slightly different way. I made it in the food processor, and rather than pulverizing it by hand, and added
avocado and crab are such a great combination.
Oh my goodness! Added tomato, a little bit of jalapeno and the seeds. Lime juice, cilantro, salt, pepper, and a little bit of corn oil, and it was really pretty. And then I made a grilled tomato vinaigrette because we are sitting on some tomatoes that we're ripening as well, which is so weird because I never have tomatoes out of season. But we had them for some reason, and so I grilled them whole and actually pureed the skin because that skin takes on so much flavor from the grill. And added raw jalapeno to that, lime juice, salt and pepper, and a little bit of cilantro, and just a little bit of Tabasco, a pinch of saffron, and a good extra virgin olive oil to that, and made a vinaigrette. And that served with the avocado puree and the crab cake. That was pretty fun.
That sounds very good. Do you do a little toast or anything along with that? Or
no.
Just
Mm-mm.
as its own?
No.
As its own dish?
No, because you don't need it with a crab cake, but I mean, both of those things would be good on toast.
Yeah,
like you said,
what
you do with yours. I mean, yeah. I mean, bruschetta is one of my favorite lunches. I almost never eat soft bread. I almost always, you know, saute baguette and olive oil or butter, whichever is appropriate, and put whatever I'm eating on that.
So you had an unusual herb on your list, right?
Rue, which this is movie day for me. One of my favorite. Well, it's not a movie. It's a TV show, and one of the main characters was talking about how she thought that the gardener had a rue allergy, and I always wondered when she was talking about it what rue is, and it's she said she had a rue hedge. Well, come to find out, rue is in the citrus family, and what I think is also fun about it is that it inspired on the card deck the clubs. So apparently that's the shape of it. It's three little sort of rounded leaves. So rue is what inspired clubs.
But how do you eat it?
Yeah, I don't know. apparently, it's very...
those are very cute stories.
Yeah,
but.
Oh, okay. All right. It's popular in Ethiopian cooking. So that's one aspect of it. It's often used to flavor coffee in Ethiopia. Huh. So used as a flavoring agent for coffee. And it's also used to stimulate appetite. So, you know, there you go. So it's been used in liqueurs as well.
So you drink Ethiopian coffee with this flavoring to stimulate your appetite.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or drink a liqueur made with it.
Interesting. Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, I'm going to hit you up for one more unsung hero herb. And we're going to talk a moment about buying herbs, where to find some of the things, whether you're growing it or finding it at markets. And then, of course, we have Chef's Challenge. They may involve a few herbs. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, let's hear your unsung hero herb.
Sorrel.
Wow, love. Think about it for a while.
Love sorrel. Lemony, citrusy, big leaves. Yeah, big long leaves. Tender, again, classic dish is salmon with sorrel. Twakwo Brothers.
Up until you mentioned the salmon, it sounded like a person with a really good personality.
Anyway, so with sorrel, you want to wash it well. You want it to, again, be undamaged and, you know, nice. It's sort of a medium green color. It's not dark green. And it is being grown locally. We've gotten it locally at market, so that's exciting.
Yeah, for years, a good amount.
Yeah, it's and you can get bags of it. So it takes a good bit to make something. Unlike, it's sort of the opposite of rosemary. You need a lot of sorrel to get flavor. Rosemary, you need very little rosemary to get flavor. And you can bring cream up to a boil, wash your leaves, and put the whole thing in the pot, puree it almost immediately, and strain it and make a really, I mean, add salt and pepper and just, I mean, that, how simple could that be?
Well, that is the twagro sauce.
Gorgeous sauce. I suggest potato puree made with a lot of butter, a little bit of cream, really beautiful potatoes, and a beautifully sauteed piece of salmon or grilled piece of salmon. Actually, I'd saute it. Get a nice sear on the outside and good salt and... You don't need anything else. It's a great dish. And, yeah, that is a Twakwo dish.
When you say a lot of butter, I'm immediately imagining a truck of
butter. 1 pound of butter per pound of potato. No, not quite that much, but half a pound. About half a pound of butter. You don't have to. You can put a teaspoon of butter in.
Yes.
You can do whatever you want when you're cooking. That's the beauty of it.
It's the freedom, right?
Mm-hmm. It is freedom. So,
you talked about it's easy to get now at farmers markets. You're going to have a time from probably middle of June where in waves you'll be able to get sorrel, and you'll be able to see a decent number of other herbs at market. Every year doesn't bring everything, and then it becomes a question of where else do you source the stuff? Do you find it in grocery stores sometimes?
I think you can find it sometimes in grocery stores. So, you know, I think you can find almost – what's great is now you can find almost anything except for some of those more exotic things that you were mentioning.
Well, some of the ethnic stores may have them. I'm going to go looking for the alligator pepper, I'll tell you what.
Okay. So, yeah, you should either market or at the grocery this time of the year. And as things come into season, you'll see it and just look for, you know, that they're crisp. I think that's really the thing, you know, that they haven't lost their water content and that they are fresh looking, undamaged, and green if they're green.
Or lost their water, or lost their oil.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm. Like rosemary.
It dries out if in refrigeration for a long time. That's why it's so nice to have a few herbs in pots or in a garden or in a window box.
It really makes a difference.
Things that you want to work with. And it is time for a chef's challenge.
Here you go, Tony.
Oh, no, you're first. You're first.
All right. Here we go.
You were all tricky last time and tried to make me go first.
6 chicken legs.
Not fresh, more, not less. 6.
Fresh laurel bay, 1/2 pound of fresh ricotta, flour, and what does that say? Oh, durum flour. Buckwheat flour, extra virgin olive oil, 1/2 dozen white nectarines. Wow. Zucchini, eggplant, dried lentils. I love lentils. Red wine vinegar, spicy Italian sausage. Ooh, fresh arugula, fresh sage. Fresh marjoram. Okay. So I'm going to start by browning off the Italian sausage, and I'm going to add marjoram to that. And actually, sage and sausage is pretty common, but those are the only 2 herbs besides the bay. So yeah, so I'll use the brown off the sausage, degrease that afterwards. I'd add probably a little
when
bit.
When you say degrease that, what does that mean?
Just remove the fat from, drain it. I'll drain the sausage so it doesn't have any excess fat in it. And add a little bit more fresh marjoram to it once it comes out of the pan and is drained. I'll cook the lentils with that. And I'm assuming I have onions and shallots. So the lentils will cook down. I'll add the sausage and the marjoram near the end and season that. And once that's done, I'll probably keep it pretty tight, not too brothy. Eggplant, I'm going to I'll wash it, I'll slice it thin, and then coat it in the durum wheat flour. So it's flour, egg wash, breadcrumb, And I'm going to saute that in good oil, which will be probably corn oil with just a tiny bit of walnut oil mixed with it, just to give it some flavor, extra flavor, and make those nice and crispy. And that's going to garnish the lentils with a sausage in it. And I will also garnish that with fresh arugula, which I'll just lay leaves probably, I'll just toss them in at the very end before plating so that you have that little bit of crispiness, but yet the flavor of the arugula. And that's that. And then I have nectarines. What am I going to do with that? And ricotta. So I'll make a little tart with the buckwheat flour, and I will mix eggs with the ricotta, a little bit of sugar, and I'll bake off the tart shells, and I'll put the fresh ricotta mixture in the bottom, pop it back in the oven, bake it probably for about 5 to 7 minutes, and then I'll lay the slices of white nectarines on top of that and serve that as my dessert.
Sounds nice.
And then, okay, good. And, and that red wine vinegar, actually, I would add a little bit of that to the lentils right before plate up, too. That would be just delicious in there. And now I have sage and zucchini, extra virgin olive oil, bay laurel, and the chicken. Okay, so I'm going to roast the chicken. Well, obviously, that's what I'm serving the lentils with. So I'm going to, I'm going to brown those chicken legs. And I'm going to use a little bit of, this is unusual, but I'm going to use a little bit of the extra virgin olive oil in the pan to brown off, with corn oil, to brown off the chicken legs, get them really brown, really crispy. And at the end, add the sage to the pan. And actually, I'm going to fry the sage. So I'll fry the sage. I'm going to save a little bit of the arugula. And the zucchini, I'm going to do long ribbons of, toss it in the extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, and I'm going to grill it. And I'll have ribbons of zucchini that I serve with these chicken legs. And actually, I'm going to put
the lentil
on the side.
Chicken legs.
Yeah.
The grilled zucchini and the lentil.
Mm-hmm. And the fried sage and a little bit of the arugula in the bottom of the bowl. And then we'll have the lentils on the side. And you can just kind of decide how you want to eat the lentils, whether you just eat them or add them to the chicken. And then the tart.
Sounds like a nice meal.
Okay.
So, okay, let's see. Ah, you gave me a goat. A whole baby one. So I have to get my big knife back from Mario, my what he calls machete.
Okay.
To break that guy down. And I'm going to want it. I mean, the saddle, you want to, it'd be nice to cut rib chops. Honestly, if it's really young and pretty small, just to salt and pepper the fresh rib chops and grill those guys is fantastic. Maybe a little bit of savory. You give me savory to do that with. But you give me the whole goat, savory, marjoram, chervil, rosemary, slab bacon, shallots, garlic, onion, cauliflower, carrots, basmati rice, strawberries, rhubarb, vanilla bean, sugar, cream, milk, eggs. So everything from strawberries down, that's a pastry involvement. But the goat's definitely about the goat. I mean, that's, I'm going to want to take those legs off, marinate those legs for a while with the rosemary and some garlic and cook them very slowly. If you could do it Argentine style where they're hanging from a string over a very long, slow-burning fire.
That would be great.
Get a little smoke in those guys and cook slowly. And then you slice that very thin when they're done. That you just need to baste them as you go along with, hopefully I've got some extra virgin olive oil around. And
sure.
Oh, it'd be pretty nice to render a little bit of that bacon and baste them in olive oil and a little bit of the bacon fat along with the rosemary and the garlic for the legs. And I'll just eat those chops for snacks as we go along. The rest of it I'm going to save for charcuterie. Let's see. Side dishes that you need for those legs. Cauliflower, carrots, basmati rice. Cauliflower, carrots, onions is a pretty good little trio, I think, for that real tender, thin-sliced goat. The basmati rice, flavor that. I honestly just cook that in a rice cooker in the simplest possible way and give it a bunch of chervil when it comes out. And that's easy, done. And for pastry, Now, strawberries and rhubarb is a combo that you always see at this time of the year, or just the time of the year that's just passed. And you do get pretty good local strawberries a lot of the time. I think the rhubarb is a little better than strawberries this year.
It's really pretty.
I was thinking, so maybe make a really good rhubarb syrup, like a simple syrup.
Sounds
good. That you can use for a sauce.
And it'll be a pretty color.
And make a custard with the strawberries. Because what my worry is, the strawberries with all the rain, they're gonna be a little diluted. So maybe slow cook those, or even dry them out a little bit on a silpat in the oven for a while.
The strawberries.
Mm-hmm. And then make a custard with the sugar, the milk, the cream, the egg, and those strawberries. And serve it with that rhubarb syrup. I think that would be...
Sounds good.
Kind of a fun, you know, like old-fashioned, like in a pudding cup kind of thing with the syrup as a little drizzle on there. So you just need the right... you can drink something good with that goat.
Yeah, I like
chivito. No question.
Yeah, that would be...
No question. Really good old Rioja, something like that. Anyway, that's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Please download this or any other programs as a podcast from the WYPR website, wypr.org. Please just go to the Foreman & Wolf page to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media.
On Instagram, Chef Wolf, and on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you have comments, questions, recipe ideas, or program ideas, email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for listening.